We are in the middle of a cultural revolution where the spectrum of gender and sexual identities is seemingly unlimited. So when author and journalist Lisa Sellen Davis's 6-year-old daughter first called herself a tomboy, Davis was hesitant. Her child favored sweatpants and t-shirts over anything pink or princess-themed, just like the sporty, skin-kneed girls that Davis had played with as a kid. But tomboy seemed like an outdated word. Why use a word with boy in it for such girls at all? So was it outdated? She looks to answer that question in the new book, Tomboy, The Surprising History and Future of Girls Who Dare to Be Different. Lisa Sellen Davis is an essayist, novelist, and journalist, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
A pleasure. So I, in a little introduction there, gave an idea as to the backstory. At what point did you know that you wanted to really dig in and even knew where to begin on answering the main question?
Well, I had written several things over the course of a few years about my experience as a parent of a kid who was not falling neatly into line in terms of how most kids sort of perform gender. So young kids around age 3, you notice in preschool, the girls start playing with the girls, the boys with the boys, they start dressing, being insistent about dressing differently. And my kid wasn't doing what the other girls were doing. And eventually she came home and when she was 6 and said, you know, someone told me I'm a tomboy. And we realized that some child at school must have been talking to his or her parent about my daughter because it was confusing for the other kids. Why, how could this girl with short hair and sweatpants actually be a girl when there were no other kids that looked like her? That's when I realized that there were so many kids like her when I was young and that they were largely gone from the media and from the playground now. And what kept happening was really, really kind adults would ask her questions like, do you want to change in the boys' locker room? Do you want to identify as a boy? And it was really a sign of them learning and caring about gender identity and wanting to facilitate and support trans kids. But it was also a sign of that childhood had become so hyper-gendered that adults couldn't understand that a girl could reject girl stuff and still be a girl. So that tension is what I wrote about next in the New York Times. And that got a tremendous response, both positive and negative. It's really the combination of those experiences that made me realize there was a book's worth of material to sort through and try to understand.
Give me a sense of some of the negative mail that you got.
Well, what's really fascinating about the feedback these days is that generally what happens if you write something, I don't know if you experience this, but the way what happens to me is if people have a positive reaction, they tend to send me a private email. If they want to discuss and debate it, they do it on Facebook. And if they want to trash me, they do it on Twitter for all to see.
Right.
Which in itself is fascinating. So it took me a long time to read through the criticism because I hadn't been the subject of a Twitter storm before and I hadn't experienced cancel culture. And the criticisms were saying that I didn't understand gender, how it worked, that I blamed trans people for adults' narrow views of gender, that I was endangering trans people. And one person in particular had written a piece arguing against my op-ed, and that had gone viral itself. And so I eventually reached out to him and said, could you sit down with me and talk to me about what it is you think I don't understand? And from there, when I set out to write the book, I really tried to keep those criticisms in mind the whole time, and I tried to figure out how I could explore this incredibly contentious topic without making vulnerable people more vulnerable. I really tried to learn from the criticism, but I also tried to stick by my thesis, which is that, you know, we don't understand enough about how the gendering of childhood has changed.
One of the fascinating aspects of the book is that you talk to many people and get many different perspectives throughout this story. Give us a sense of finding those people and really the cast of characters that you have put forth here to give us this complicated story.
I try to get as many different perspectives as possible. And I asked everyone I knew to put me in touch with people who had identified as tomboys as children or been identified as tomboys. And I did speak to a couple of current children who identify as tomboys, but there aren't a ton of them. And because the word is out of favor. And then I talked to people from ages 8 to 80. I talked to people all over the country. I talked to people of many different races. I talked to people from different economic statuses. I tried to paint as complicated a picture of tomboyism as I could, and also to see what these stories had in common and where they diverged. And it was really fascinating to see especially what they had in common, which was this kind of what some people call a boyhood for girls. And many of them, most of them had some female friends, that was most common, but some had none. And they kind of ran with a pack of boys and were often treated like boys and experienced a kind of freedom that I think affected them for the rest of their lives. So although they grew up to have many different sexual orientations, many different gender identities, different kinds of jobs and worldviews, most of them were incredibly self-confident. And that could be because they were socialized with or as boys, and it could be because they felt comfortable around men and masculinity because it was such a big part of their childhood. But that was really the one thing that seemed to carry through no matter how different their adulthoods were. They had that in common.
You write early in the book, "Are tomboys girls who play with boys? Most literary tomboys from Joe March to Scout Finch run with the boys in sexual tension-free friendships. Sissies and tomboys are portrayed as outsiders, communing like Joe and her best friend, Lori." It brings up the idea of the portrayals, and you date the word back to the 1500s of tomboy and how it has evolved.
Yeah, it has a fascinating evolution. It was first used to describe rowdy, misbehaving boys because the tom comes from male type like tomcat or tom turkey. And not too long after that, tomboy becomes a word for lascivious women with a sexual appetite that would rival what people back then would have thought was a man's sexual appetite. And about 100 years later, it starts being applied to rowdy girls who are acting, you know, like boys. But what I found over and over is there are so many girls, you know, acting like that, that we made this word for them instead of it kind of incorporating that sort of rowdiness into girlhood. And that's the problem with the word, is that it seems like an equal opportunity offender. So I found articles dating back to 1898. Saying that tomboy is an offensive word because it implies that all of that stuff like being independent and assertive and physical and strong, that all that stuff actually belongs to boys. And you can find articles all the way, and I think last year there was even an article, a blog post on the Girl Scout site saying tomboy is a sexist word. So it's kind of fascinating that it had this brief period in the 1970s when it was a super popular word, and it was pretty popular in the mid 19th century for girls and men. But over and over, people are offended by it.
You have a fascinating chapter in the book entitled "Are Tomboys Born or Made?" Why is that such an important question to consider?
One of the things that I've really only come to understand recently, and I didn't even understand it while I was writing the book, is that there are different people believe that the word gender itself has different meanings. So there are people for whom gender means gender identity, and it means it's something that's biological, and the way we behave comes from our biology. And then there are the people who believe that gender means social norms and expectations, and that gender is entirely socially constructed. And when people do research about gender, they're often looking for the biological underpinnings of gender behavior. And they ask that question, and they ask, are there men's and women's brains? And they do lots of research, and you get these different wings of people, some who say, yes, men and women have sexually dimorphic brains, they're totally different. And you get people who say, no, they're actually they're way more similar than they are different. And each group sort of has a different reason that they want gender to be either biological or socially constructed. Feminists need to prove that it's socially constructed so we can say, you know, we are capable of, you know, owning our businesses, voting, you know, so all of the things that gender as a social construct, all of the ways it was used to oppress women, they've needed to say that stuff is not about our biology, that's about culture. And then you have kind of trans people and people involved in the care and medicine around trans people saying all of this stuff is biological and we need to respect that and not try to change people. And the truth is that those things shouldn't be thought of as one or the other. But gender is biological and it's social. They work together. Culture affects biology. Biology affects culture over and over again. So it's kind of a false dichotomy.
We are just about out of time, but I would like to end with a question that you end the book with, or toward the end. And it is, you obviously go into great detail, but a general question to you is, should this word still be around? Do we still need the word tomboy?
Well, I hate to answer your question with a question, but what do we replace it with? That's, I guess,
right,
the question. So there are two wings. There are people who say, again, tomboy is so sexist, it implies all that good stuff really belongs to boys, and we should just call these girls who are, you know, rowdy and who like short hair and who want to wear sweatpants and play sports and play with boys, we should just call them girls. Why do we need to call them anything different because of their behavior or the way they look? And then you have people who are saying, no, we should not say tomboy because it's too gendered, and we should say gender nonconforming because that's a gender neutral term and it can apply to anybody. But it's still doing that work of setting kids apart by their behavior or expression. So in theory, gender nonconforming is less about your gender identity than it is about your gender expression. But do we need special words for kids who don't comply with gender norms? And that's, I think, part of this larger contentious debate that's taking place. And my personal feeling, you know, my mission with the book is to have less of childhood be gendered, to have fewer toys and colors and clothes and personality traits be gendered. And that's kind of outside of the language and more about how we participate in the hypergendering of childhood. So I'm more on the side of, no, we don't need this word anymore, but not because we've achieved so much equality in childhood, as many people think. I think we don't need this word anymore because we are focusing too much attention and have too many expectations on how children divide. And we should really encourage, we should really be trying to raise them just slightly more similarly. It's the best thing for them.
The name of the book is Tomboy, The Surprising History and Future of Girls Who Dare to Be Different. The book is published by Hachette. Lisa Sellen Davis, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure having you on the program.
I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me about this project. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Tomboy. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.